I don't know if the parable of the sower was covered in the month of July or not. I missed a lot of that, and so I didn't know if that was already covered or what the plan that Shane had given out. But the parable of the sower is the first parable that Jesus has taught here in Matthew chapter 13. It's the first parable that Matthew records, and I think it's particularly important that we at least address that particular parable before we go into the wheat and tares, because it bears some significance, I think, on the points that Jesus is trying to make to his audience, based on who his audience is, when he talks about the wheat and the tares. And then the second part of that is the latter part of Matthew 13. We'll be talking about the dragnet. And actually, we're going to turn that particular part of the lesson over to Mike Toomer when he comes in. Don't tell him, but he's the expert on that particular area. And so we're going to let him kind of tell us a little bit. You think he'll do it, Rara? No, he's not going to do it. I didn't think he would either. But if he can hear me back there, at least he's not up front before getting all nervous. All right, turn over to Matthew 13, and let me just ask you a couple of things. In Matthew 13, Jesus teaches the parable of the sower. And when he gets through teaching the parable of the sower, he's there with these multitudes, and his disciples come to him, and they ask him, what are you doing? Why are you teaching and talking about these stories and parables? What's the point? And if you'll look over in Matthew chapter 13, he says several very important things which relate to what he had just got through teaching and that are going to relate to what he's going to be talking about in all parables that he does teach. And he says in verse 10, this is the disciples, they come to him and they say, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" And if you'll skip to verse 13, Jesus answers them and he says, "I speak to them in parables because while seeing, they do not see. And while hearing, they do not hear, nor do they understand." And in verse 16, he says to these disciples, "Blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear." What is the gist of what Jesus is trying to get his disciples at this point to understand about how he is going to be teaching and what the purpose of the parables are?
What he says about Isaiah, doesn't it? In between those two verses you read, doesn't that?
Okay. Tell me what that is. Exactly right. That's exactly the point that he's making. It's not a literal auditory issue. It's not a visual issue with these disciples, with these people. It's a matter of the heart. And that's what Brother Sutherland was just alluding to, and that's what Christ was trying to emphasize to them. He taught in parables because he wanted people to grapple with concepts, to think about it, to deliberate about things, to challenge their thinking, and to struggle with things and come to conclusions, because the heart would lead them to an understanding of what God was actually wanting them to know, or what Christ was actually trying to teach them. It wasn't something that just came like that. And if you go back and you look at the parable of the sower, what was the objective of the parable of the sower? What was the whole point of those illustrations? Yeah, He's laying it out. He's telling the people from the very beginning, these are the kind of hearts that men have. And there's only one heart that can respond in a way that will understand. There's only one heart that will respond in a way that can comprehend the teachings of Christ. Now, when we get to this particular parable, the parable of the tares and the wheat, he's using the same expectations and standards. He's still dealing with the heart, but he's going to change a little bit. In the parable of the sower, he's talking about the kind of heart that can bear fruit, the kind of heart that can respond to the gospel call of what Jesus came to do, the kind of heart that can receive salvation. There's only one. And it's the kind of heart that is related to the good and fertile soil. That's the kind of heart that can bear fruit. There are other kinds of soil and there which relate to other kinds of hearts. But none of them can bear fruit for the Lord. And so what in verse 16... and in verse 13, he says there, open your ears that you might hear. He is going to say repeatedly throughout his parable. He's going to say repeatedly throughout the gospel. And we're going to refer to some passages this morning that are going to also echo that very same sentiment. When he's not speaking in parables, as a matter of fact, he's not even speaking. It's the apostles that are speaking. But they're using that same analogy, that same illustration. Open your ears that you may hear. And when you hear that, open your ears that you might hear. What is he referring to?
The heart.
The heart. That's exactly right. And brethren, all of these parables, we need to understand that they are understood the right way when we have a heart that is subjected and is reverent and is humble to the Savior. That's the only way we can understand these parables, the way they were meant to be. So, the wheat and the tares. Go ahead, you're probably already there, Matthew chapter 13. And let's read this parable together. Matthew 13 and beginning in verse 24. And Jesus presented another parable to them, saying, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed tares also among the wheat, and he went away. But when the wheat sprang up and bore grain, then the tares became evident. And the slaves of the landowner came to him and said to him, sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares? And he said to them, an enemy has done this. And the slaves said to him, do you wish us then to go and gather them up? But he said, no. Lest while gathering up the tares, you also root up the wheat that is with them. Allow both to grow together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, first gather up the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them up. But gather the wheat into my barn. All right. Now, I asked the question already. Why do you think this parable fits right here following the parable of the sower in relationship to what it's talking about? Anybody have any particular ideas?
Okay.
Okay, so there's some similarities in the fact we're still dealing with agriculture. We're still dealing with the concept with seed and soil. But what's the difference here in this one and the parable of the sower? What was the focus on the parable of the sower versus what is the focus on the parable of the wheat and the tares? Okay. In the parable of the sower, the focus was on the hearts, which was represented by what? The soil. In this parable, just like Ralph said, the focus is not per se on the soil. It's the focus is on the seed. And the idea is that all of the ground is what? Was prepared and fertile. So we don't need to kind of get confused with the concept of what Christ talked about earlier. Completely different story, and he's making a completely different point, but he's using some of the same illustrations and analogy, just in a different way. All right? So here the focus is not on the soil. All of the ground is ready to be planted. It's fertile. All right? So that's taken for granted. All right? Secondly, it builds upon the concept that hearts will respond. All right? Or they won't respond to the gospel call. But in this parable, every heart does what? It does produce, doesn't it? All right. In this parable, every seed germinates, every seed produces something, right? So the fertile ground produces something. The key at this one is what's it going to produce? What's it going to grow? And so it builds upon that concept we just talked about. And why do you think this is particularly important to the audience that Christ is talking to? Can you think back and just recollect who is in the audience? Okay, you got Pharisees in the audience. Who else? You got the regular Jews who are often just referred to as the masses that follow him, or not the Gentiles yet, but the multitudes. They're the multitudes. So you got the Pharisees, then you got the general multitudes who are following him. Who else do you have? I'm sorry? You've got his disciples who have already specifically questioned him, and then you've got another group who may have ulterior motives, very similar to the Pharisees, not the Sadducees. They'll start with an S, though. The scribes, all right? From Matthew chapter 9, all the way through, going all the way back into the parable of on the Mount, he's teaching to the masses, and they all consist of scribes and Pharisees and the general multitudes and his disciples. Why in this illustration do you think that might be important? And can y'all even see that? I don't think I ever get this right. Can y'all see the font? No, Sister Oliver's not here, but y'all can't see it either, huh? Okay. Well, I really apologize for that. I thought the gold and black would contrast a little bit better, but it doesn't. It does on my computer screen, but it does not up here, and I apologize. So what it says is what we just got through saying. All the four groups of people, the Pharisees and scribes and the multitudes and the disciples who are following Jesus, all right? And can you tell me why this is particularly important. Yeah, Ryan?
Well, to the eye, it would seem that they all look similar and they're all appearing to be following Jesus for the same purposes or listening to his teaching, but just like the wheat and the tares, it's hard to tell them apart from the eye until they mature, and then the fruit that they bear determines whether or not they're good or bad. But I think it's trying to get that point across. It's just because the Pharisees or the scribes are attending and listening and everything doesn't mean that they have the same motive or the same
Well, thank you, Ryan. That pretty much just summarizes my whole lesson. And so we... He's exactly right. It's about the appearance. Who do you think the ones that look religious are? Yeah, the scribes, and they're the Pharisees. All right? They are the ones that stand out. They are the ones who have the appearance. They've got the right wardrobe. They have the right associates. They've got the right positions of prominence in the city and in the synagogue and in the temple. They're the ones that look like they're the religious ones. They're the ones that would play the part, all right, if we were just looking for the character. But just like Ryan said, the point that Jesus is going to be making here and why he goes back and hits this every time he does the parables is open your ears and listen. He wants them to take in to their heart that appearances are not always what they seem. And I think that's a very, very key and important part of what he's talking about. All right, so let's just kind of break this parable down and let's go through it. And then let's make some application as to what Jesus is talking about. So in verse 24, he says, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field." Now, what is... Now, and we're going to kind of go back and forth. And actually, it probably would help to actually read Jesus' explanation, but we'll wait just a little bit and read it in a minute. But when he says the kingdom of heaven, what is he talking about here? Ma'am? All right. He's talking about the believers. Look, you've got the field, all right? You've got this sower, and he goes out and he's spreading this seed in this prepared and cultivated land. All right, and the seed that this particular sower is sowing is what? It's good seed. Therefore, it's going to do what? Produce a good crop. That's the nature of the seed. That you go back to the first parable. That's the nature of what the good seed does in fertile soil. That's the byproduct of it. That's the way it was designed and created to do. All right? So, this man or this landowner is sowing the seed in this field. And the field is representing what? Yeah, it's the world. All right? So, is the kingdom the world? Is it the whole field? No. No, the kingdom's not the whole field. It's not like the kingdom, he's referring to it as the earth. The kingdom of heaven might be compared to a man who sowed good seed in a field. It's representing the good seed that's going to bear good fruit. And then... in verse 25, "While men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed tares." His enemy came and sowed tares also among the wheat and went away. All right? So there are some things in verse 25 in regards to a comparison and a contrast that I want you to make. We have two main characters in this story so far. And who are they? Okay, that's exactly right. You got the landowner, and you got the enemy, and you got the sower, and you got the sower. They're both doing the same thing. They're both spreading seed. The owner who owns the land is spreading the good seed. He cultivated the land. He's tending the land. He plants the good seed. But this enemy comes in and he sows tares. And this enemy, what does it say? What does it say about him? I think I may be out of place in my slides, but we'll just skip over it when we get to it. What does it say about this enemy, particularly? Okay, he comes at night under the cover of darkness. All right, automatically indicating what? We can draw that conclusion. But ulterior motives, all right, evil motives. And somebody else said something. I heard it, but I don't know where it came from. I'm sorry? In stealth, that's exactly right. He did it stealthily. He did it under the cover of darkness where no one could see him. All right? And what else do we find out about this man? It's important because it talks about his character, his nature. All right? He is an enemy. Yeah. All right? So the enemy comes into the field. He sows the tares, and we'll talk about exactly what it is in a minute, but it's obviously a harmful product, and he leaves, indicating what? He's patient, okay. He might be patient. Okay, he's sneaky, he's a coward, but he also, I think, is pretty confident of something. That's exactly right. And we'll get to that in just a minute. But it hasn't actually even taken root yet. At this point, the enemy who comes in under the stealth of night sows these tares, and I think it's important that we understand he leaves. What does that tell us about this man? Yeah, Nathan?
He's got the easiest job. His job is done. He's come in, he's sown his bad seed,
he doesn't have to do anything else. It's going to do it for him. He doesn't have to work. He doesn't have to maintain it. He's taken advantage of what the owner of the land has done, and he has tried to destroy it, tried to ruin it. And he's not worried about what he has done taking root. He knows it's going to happen, doesn't he? Patty? Okay, then you're exactly right. And we'll get to that point in just a minute. Yes, Dwayne? Very excellent point and good analogy. Yes, sir, Chris.
I think the reason he's so confident is he's done it before. This is something he's well versed in. Yeah. Puts it into play, walks away. He knows. Okay.
Well, it's easier to sow the seed. It's a lot more difficult to make the soil fertile. So he's going into fertile soil.
Yeah. The enemy knows the characteristics of the soil. He knows what's going to happen when he sows the seed. He knows the nature of his seed. He doesn't have to tend it. He's not worried about that because he knows the nature of what the tare will do. And it, in fact, does exactly what he intended it to do. All right? So I think this is an important thing to understand, that we understand. And of course, I know you know the connection, and you're talking about the character and the traits of the evil one, Satan himself. And I want you to think about how he works, how he manipulates, how he takes advantage, and how he absolutely cares nothing about the impact, the horrific impact of what he does. It's catastrophic when you think about it in the lives of mankind. All right? So we'll make those points in just a minute, but let me just talk to you a little bit about this. Tares and wheat. The tares, as they grow, and I think maybe Ryan or somebody over here, I think, illustrated this earlier. Tares and wheat, you can't distinguish them. You can't tell them apart when they take root and when they begin to grow as stalks. You can't identify one from the other. And so as this process takes place, and as the wheat germinates, so do the tares germinate. And as the wheat grows and gains nourishment, so do the tares. And it's very important, is that at harvest time, that's the only time you can tell that the tares and the wheat are not the same. And I don't know how much time it actually takes for the wheat to actually then blossom with the head of grain. But whatever that time frame is, that's when you identify that what you've got growing within your wheat is not wheat. All right? And the tares will produce not a full head of prosperous wheat, but they grow these black seeds, which are poisonous. And actually, if they are ground together with the wheat, if it actually goes into the wheat and goes through the mill and is ground, it contaminates all of the wheat. You can't eat it. It's poisonous. There's some type of a spore that's created in the wheat, and it just germinates and destroys all of it. So it is absolutely critical that the landowner identify it and be able to sift it or get it out, because the wheat is absolutely worthless without it. All right? So, any points before we go on or comments? All right? All right. So, I told you I had that slide in the wrong spot. This is the one we already talked about. All right? They're both sowers, the landowner and the enemy. And they're both, but what contrasts them, the point we were making, is that the landowner maintains the land, maintains the crop, and the enemy departs with no further interest in it. All right? So, in verse 26, where we stop, but when the wheat sprang up and bore grain, then the tares became evident also. And the slaves of the land came to the owner and said to him, "Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? How then does it have tares?" The wheat and the tares both had to go through the same process. And we alluded to this earlier, and some comments were made about it. But the process is the same for both, for them to develop, fully develop, in whatever their outcome is. You only got two. You got either wheat or the tares. But whatever the outcome is going to be, they both have to go through this same process. It takes time for them to grow. It takes nourishment for them both to mature. And then at the end, they both actually do have what? They both bear fruit. They both bear fruit which represents the intent of whom? The sower. That's exactly right. The sower. I'm sorry, Brother John? Yeah, here, we'll get to that point in just a minute. You're exactly right. It is important for him to let both grow. And there's a reason for it. But I want you to make the connection, though, secondly, is that the product, the fruit, what both of them bear are reflective of who planted it. The sowers. Both men sowed, the enemy and the landowner. And both men had fruit bear as a result of what they did sow. All right? That applies to us as well in a personal level. All right? You had a comment, Chris?
Yeah, I don't want to get too far off topic, but this kind of reminds me of the good seed being the word and how I grew up in a denomination, so how how much evil can come out of that with you know, our denomination that we had. I mean, and to even go a step further, I had a conversation last week with somebody, and, you know, we got to talk about God or Jesus or something, I can't remember exactly, but they said, oh, you're religious. They put us in the same category as every other religious person, and you know how much evil is out there. And I have to sit back and say, well, not religious per se, I just follow Jesus. Because they're going to put you in the same category as the terrorists. We look the same. We look the same every day, you know. But there's a lot of people that are so-called religious that are out there that are evil. And they see that too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the terrorists coming up, we look a lot like the people every Sunday going to church, but we have to be different. You know, we're the wheat, we're not the terrorists. Mm-hmm. And we have to make sure that we delineate that line. Because people will put us in that category. And to the detriment of us trying to teach them the gospel, because they'll say, you're the same. You're the same as everyone else, but we're not. We need to make sure we know. And this, I think this is a good illustration of drawing that line.
Well, I think that is exactly one of the key primary points that Christ is trying to draw here. And if you go back to his audience that we were talking about earlier, yeah, there were a bunch of people, four different groups, really, that were there in his audience. But things weren't as they appeared. They weren't. All right? Somebody had their hand up. Nathan?
I was just going to point out, for me, when I look at the story, I think about the good wheat as Christianity. You know, the farmer has to constantly maintain that field to make sure that crop comes to fruition. It's just like our Christianity. We can't be like the evil sower and just sow the seeds and then it does its own thing like the weeds. You don't have to touch those and they will grow like wildfire. But in order to maintain your Christianity, it's a daily process of, you know, making sure that you're doing what you need to do. And I think it's important to understand here, the farmer realizes that they're having to bring up both crops and split them at the end because it takes a lot of work to bring that crop to the end of this.
You're exactly right. It's a very good point. Yes, sir. Well, you know, you make a good point, but you know, in his illustration, when he actually describes to the multitude or what each of the particular points of the parable are, do you know the one group that he does not describe in his explanation are the slaves? He doesn't give them a particular explanation and role, even though they obviously are workers, all right? Unless they are also the reapers, you know, but the reapers are referred to as the angels. So I'm really not sure what specific role in the overall analogy or parable the slaves actually have. That's a good point that you mentioned. Yes, sir. Very good point. Very good point. All right. So let's get on with the specific point that Jesus is making about the tare. Even though it identified with the wheat and looked the same, what was it incapable of doing? Producing a good fruit. It was absolutely impossible for the tare to produce a head of grain. It couldn't do it. Its DNA didn't allow it. It was not. Its genetic code wouldn't allow it. It was representative of its sower, who he was. These are representative of sons of the devil, those who have absolutely, completely forsaken. And I want you to know, when he goes and he illustrates in the second half of this, and he talks about the judgment that is pending, he goes into where? To purge these tares out. Kind of where what Nathan or Chris was talking about. Where does he go into to purge these tares? Specifically said, starts with a K. Into the kingdom itself. So I want you to think again now to the audience that he was talking to. Who are they? Who were these people? All right? Heirs of the kingdom, there are also heirs of Satan, his children. The tares represent those who look like they belong to the Son of God. They look like they belong in the kingdom. They look like, Chris said, everybody else. But the fact of the matter is, they do not belong to the King. He did not sow them. And I want you to think now about, go back to Matthew chapter 7. Because before Jesus even started these parables, do you remember what he was talking about when it came to judgment? Matthew chapter 7, 20 through 23. Listen to what he says. So then you will know them by what? Their fruits, what they produce. Listen to what he says. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name cast out demons, and in your name perform many miracles. And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, ye who practice what? Lawlessness. The term that Jesus uses to describe those who will not submit to his authority. You practice lawlessness. Which group of people are going to fit into this category here? Didn't we do all these things? Didn't we say we were Christians? Didn't we go to church every Sunday and Wednesday? Didn't we sit in the right pew? No. That's not the basis by which you become an heir of the kingdom. What is the basis in this parable? What fruit do you have? By whose hand were you sown? That's the key. And that's the whole point of what Jesus is trying to make in this parable. Do not just look at what you see visually. Listen with your ears to what I am saying. At the end of this parable in chapter 13, I want you to flip over there because this kind of ties it all together. He says in verse 51, and this is at the end of the dragnet, which we obviously will not get to today. Have you understood all of these things? Have you heard me? Is that what he's asking? No. He's not asking, did you just hear me? Do you understand? Has it resonated within your heart? Do you know what I am trying to teach you about who the heirs of the kingdom are? And they respond to him how? Yes. Yes, we understand. But in reality, what? They didn't. They didn't. Yes, Justin. Good point. He has a right, and of course, I had a slide on that as well. I want you to listen to this, though, because in the book of Revelation, he actually, in John's vision, is referring to this exact issue. He says, I know your deeds, Sardis, that you have a name that you are alive, but you are really dead. That's exactly what he's trying to get them to see. That it is not just who you say, what you say, where you sit, who your associates are. It's by whose hand you have been sown, by the authority of Christ. Thank you very much for your comments and your attention this morning.